Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
From the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, this is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everybody. Happy New Year as we have our first show for the year, and we're going to start out with a dandy. A legend in television, naturalist, biologist, zoologist, he's done it all. Wild Kingdom star Jim Fowler will be with us in just a few moments as we hear about his adventures from the past and present, and of course the many times of Johnny Carson and the escapades with Marlon Perkins, and he'll be along to share with us, gosh, what's going to be a fascinating hour. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson. The music tonight, Jim Johnson, and from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. How's everything at the Batson Wildlife Preserve?
Well, it's cold. We've got ice and snow, but hey, everything's, you know, what can we say? It's winter.
That's right.
So, and you know, one of the most commonly asked questions, people will say, well, how do your big cats like your tigers respond to this cold weather? I have to tell them, even though they're native to India, that they really have more energy and their appetites are better in the winter. They really seem to enjoy the cold weather and the snow. So it's you wouldn't think that unless you lived with them.
Well, I'm glad they do because I don't really appreciate it as much.
Well, it's great to have Jim Fowler. We were talking earlier on before we went on the air that he's been a very important part of our lives. I know that,
that's right.
Dr. Day, you had a chance to grow up and watch the Wild Kingdom shows, myself as well, and I blame him for the job that I do now, my wildlife program. So if I'm having a bad day, I'll say, that darn Jim Fowler. Anyway. Using an artistic modern style, Jet Kaiser Films is the underwriter of our Wild World News, brought to you by Dr. Henry Day. Dr. Day, what have you got for us tonight?
Well, if you still have a Christmas tree in your living room, I want you to call your local zoo and tell them you heard this story.
Okay.
We're heading off to Panama City Beach, Florida. Animals at Zoo World have had some fun with donated Christmas trees that were covered with peanut butter, cereal, and fruit roll-ups. The animals also got wrapped presents under their trees.
Well, that's a pretty good idea. You know.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting idea. I'm not sure how good it is, but it's pretty interesting.
That's right.
Now, last week we had a story about in Wyoming about the snow was so heavy that the moose and the deer were coming down into town.
Right.
We also had a story about in Aberdeen, South Dakota, about the skating pig.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I remember that story.
Yeah. Well,
what was that skating pig story or his name? I'm sorry.
Well, it was a 400-pound sow that got loose and was captured on a skating rink, and the pig's name was Tanya Harding.
Oh!
Yeah, yeah.
That's too bad.
Well, okay, we got a skating moose tonight, Fairbanks, Alaska. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports that a moose that fell through the ice into the Chena River was rescued by local residents. Photographer Ron Murray, one of the rescuers, said it looked as though the moose was just about to give up when it got a leg up on the ice and the rescuers were able to tug it free.
That's a big animal. That's a lot of weight. Very powerful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That had to be exciting. Sound like an episode of Wild Kingdom.
Exactly. While I hover safely here at the helicopter, Jim will wrestle a giant anaconda in the swamp.
That's right.
All right, well, they're not horsing around in Rock Springs, Wyoming. the Bureau of Land Management will hold a streamlined wild horse adoption January 29th. Nearly 700 untrained geldings and mares will be available for adoption. Now, anyone qualified to adopt a wild horse will be able to fill out an application and be approved and take the animal home the same day. Now, the adoptions will be on a first-come, first-served basis.
I wonder how many people they have that adopt those wild horses. Probably.
Well, let's hope at least 700.
700? Oh, my Lord.
That's right.
My God.
All right, now we're heading off to God's country. Well, where would that be?
I would think it's probably Colorado.
Okay, well, this story is going to make you a little mad at first, and then you're going to be glad. All right?
Okay.
Now, Colorado may protect the sleeping bears. Hibernating bears would be off limits to Colorado hunters under a rule state wildlife officials proposed after a debate over the shooting of a black bear in a cave. The 703-pound bear shot in November may be the largest ever killed in the state. It sparked public outrage after the hunter told a newspaper that he tracked the male bear to a cave and waited 5 hours for the bear to emerge. The Wildlife Commission voted Wednesday to draft a rule banning the hunting of bears in dens.
Good for the state of Colorado. That's outstanding news.
It
That's
is
a
outstanding
disgusting
news.
Story.
I know. I told you you'd be mad and then you'd be glad.
Yes.
All right. Well, you know what I always say?
What do you say?
There's nothing that smells like a wet buffalo.
Oh, well, I've forgotten that.
Yeah. Well, and if you want to know what a wet buffalo smells like, well, here's your chance. Helena, Montana. Wildlife officials are seeking approval to create a bison management plan and scope out sites that would be suitable to relocate dozens of bison from the genetically pure Yellowstone National Park herd. Now, the goal is to find areas that could support a population of at least 50 bison now involved in a quarantine program.
We need to ask our good friend and Yellowstone Park Ranger, well, I should say former Yellowstone Park Ranger, Bob Jackson, about that. So what we'll do is we're going to have him on the program. You put that story in your file, and we'll bring that back out and discuss that with him. We'll do that real soon.
Good. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there must be a special smell in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. West End residents are troubled by the presence of dozens of turkey vultures roosting in the trees and on rooftops. Now, animal control officers think that the carrion-eating birds are attracted to the area by a nearby solid waste transfer station. Now, they say that getting rid of them is a problem, but killing them without a permit will draw fines.
Well, I believe they're federally protected, so...
I believe they are, too. They should be.
So, you know, we'll ask Jim about that later, but, yeah, that's stupid.
Well, if you haven't heard all week about the blackbirds that have died, it's one of the big stories of the week. But before we get into the bad news stories, we'll get into the good bird stories.
Okay.
Now, this is from my home state of Kansas, Great Bend, Kansas. More species of birds than usual stopped by the Cheyenne Bottoms Wildlife Area this winter. The National Audubon Society found 95 species. Robert Penner, a manager at the Wetlands for the Nature Conservancy, cited that the mild winter was the reason for the great number of birds. And among the species seen were the long-tailed duck, the orange-crowned warbler, and the black-crowned night heron.
Wow, that's great. I always have a lot of respect for the people that get involved with that type of a program. Counting birds, I mean, gosh, that's an easy thing to do.
No kidding.
And we're going to talk to Jim about this weird occurrence with the birds that have died in Arkansas and so forth, and get his feelings about that. We'll talk about that to him in just a few moments.
That's great. Okay, now, in Newport, Kentucky, Mighty Mike, a 14-foot, 800-pound American alligator, is on display at the aquarium. Mighty Mike, considered the largest in the county on display outside of Florida, is on loan from a private collection. Now, I was thinking, you've got 14 alligators, right?
Yes, we do.
Shouldn't they get a job?
Well, they... I tell them that every day, Henry.
Get them out there. Start them out with something like a paper route.
We've had long talks with alligators how they need to get a job. So, no, they have a job. They're animal ambassadors, so that's their responsibility.
Okay, now here's a story that you just asked. Well, I will end up the animal news with it tonight, and it's not. It's a living thing, and I just say why. Fallon, Nevada. Vandals have chopped down the landmark shoe tree on U.S. 50. Authorities say the 70-foot cottonwood near Middlegate that was a popular stopping point for travelers was cut down late Thursday. Now, the tree drew thousands of people who'd stopped to see the hundreds of shoes, boots, and sneakers dangling from the limbs.
Well, so what do they think about that?
Well, I don't know. It's just one of those things that just, I don't know. Exactly.
Well, I have no comment on that story. So that's our Wild World News for tonight.
That's enough for tonight. I'm excited to get Jim on.
Yes. Using an artistic, modern style, Jet Kaiser Films produces affordable wedding videos. Remember this, Dr. Day. That are as unique as the couples that star in them. Check out their website, jetkaiserfilms.com. They are the underwriters for Wild World News. We also like to thank RadioMom.fm and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. And also Harrison College, now offering veterinarian technician courses. If you love animals and people, this might be a great career path. This website, www.harrison.edu, or call for info at 888-544-4422. Those are our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Presented by the company with Survey Proven Health Insurance, Mutual of Omaha. Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom is presented by Mutual of Omaha, the people who pay.
More people than anyone else I know to work in the field of wildlife. My good friend for the last 30 years, the legendary Jim Fowler from his plantation in Albany, Georgia. Good evening, Jim. Did we lose Jim?
I'm thinking we must have. Give me a minute and then we'll get him back on the line.
Okay. All the way to Albany, Georgia, that's quite a ways. Of course, we have the string and the two cups, so that's sometimes that's a problem. And I'm so disappointed he missed the Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom theme music. That was my big surprise for tonight. I felt so so honored to be able to have that on the show, and plus I will be sending a bill to Mutual of Omaha for that.
It was pretty nice to hear it. It's been a long time.
Oh, I tell you, it just brings you chills. It's just outstanding, I mean. But he is a legend, Jim Fowler. I mean, working with Marlon Perkins, and of course they always would make the jokes when his appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson on how Jim would be wrestling the two-horned rhino in heat while Marlon was in the tent with the native girls having margaritas. So... And I understand Marlon would get rather upset when they'd say that, but then he was told one day, he said, when they talk about you, that's a good thing, regardless. So, gosh, the Johnny Carson show. Nothing like it since. So,
yep.
I can remember the many, many times that we went out with Jim and provided animals, and it was always an adventure between staying at Toluca Lake Motel and taking aardvarks into one's room and Arctic foxes and giant snakes and Celebes apes and badgers and baboons and all these different animals, and it was always an adventure.
Right now, so please.
So do we have him? I thought I heard that voice.
No, that well, unfortunately we're having trouble getting through. Let me keep trying. Hold on.
Okay. Well, you know, when he's in the wilderness areas of Albany, Georgia on this plantation, I mean, that's you know, he probably didn't have as good of adventures dangling from helicopters, grabbing condors from the cliffs of California shorelines, to having anacondas half swallow his arm in a South American swamp, or all the various things that I remember.
Now, you've met Jim in person before. I've never met him before. He appears to be a rather statuesque man. Is he pretty tall?
Well, Jim's a big guy. I mean, and I've known Jim for 30 years around this place. He's known as Uncle Jim. In fact, his son Mark used to help us out around the animal compound. We gave him the nickname Son of Jim, which he... and it wasn't long before Jim was actually calling him Son of Jim.
Larry?
Yes.
We have Mr. Fowler. Unfortunately, his landline went out, but we do have him on the line.
Okay, great. Good evening,
Jim. Do you want us to go ahead and replay the opening?
Did Jim, did you hear the opening?
No.
I heard quite a bit of it, but then...
No, did you hear the music?
I've never had my life. Huh?
Did you hear the music?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. No need to replay that.
Pretty impressive, yeah.
Well, you know, we...
I've never had my land down. I've never had my landline go out. I don't know what happened.
Well, it's probably...
Yeah.
Probably been eaten in two by one of your eland or zebra, and who knows what the heck. So how's Big Jim doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. I'm down here in, South Georgia on a wildlife ranch. I've been raising different animals for a long time.
And I just heard recently, you have zebra down there. What all do you have at the ranch?
I've got a big herd of eland antelope,
mm-hmm.
largest of all the antelopes, and big bulls that weigh about 1,500 pounds. And I've got zebras, and one of them gave me a hernia a while back, so I had to have a hernia operation just recently. That's probably a little more information than you need.
Ouch.
But anyway, I've got emus, a few things like that also. Ostrich. Yeah.
Well, one of the most popular stories that's been going on, and we wanted your insight on this, is the...
Yeah.
Quantities of birds that have literally fallen out of the sky in Arkansas and these other events that have gone on across the country. What do you think's going on here, Jim?
I've been trying to get some more information on that. You know, at one time there, the USDA were poisoning blackbirds in rookeries.
Mm-hmm.
And they were waiting till it was a cold, wet night.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd spray this big rookery with detergent, and that would keep the birds from being able to keep warm, so they'd freeze to death. But that from what I've heard, is not the case out there. Somebody said that they found broken parts on the birds. Well, that's pretty hard to have that many birds killed by running into something, I would think. Pretty hard to believe.
Well, yeah, and there's been such a quantity. I mean, what did they run into if that was the case? I mean, a dirigible,
yeah, exactly,
size of a football field.
We got to find out what's going on. That's for sure.
Well, they need
to
send us down there.
What disturbs me? what disturbs me, Larry, is that there are lots of birds that are beginning to disappear, including the American kestrel, which is a little falcon. And they used to be all over Georgia, but I'm afraid that pesticides and herbicides are beginning to get them. But I don't see too many people concerned about that. That's what scares me.
I had a kestrel in my backyard. Had a kestrel in my backyard a few days ago.
Did you?
Well, your
beautiful
backyard
bird.
Is a little
just
weird.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, they're great. That's the first birds of prey or bird of prey that I trained when I was a kid. Yeah.
Is that what got you interested in your field of work, Jim?
Well, I don't know. I wrote a paper in the fourth grade on birds of prey. And I always had, you know, a very good rapport. I got the old Encyclopedia Britannica out. I won't tell you what year that is because it might date me a little bit. But, I wrote that paper. And then, actually, I trained birds of prey a lot of my early life. And when I graduated from college, I became a lecturer trainer down at a place in Silver Spring, Florida. Actually, Ocala, which is near there. And I used to train eagles and falcons and fly them in front of the public.
Mm-hmm.
And also I would run cheetahs to lures. Nowadays, a few of the zoological parks are figuring it out that you can exercise cheetahs by running them to lures. But anyway, that's where Marlon Perkins in the late 50s, Marlon had a program in the 50s called Zoo Parade. And he walked around the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago and used to talk about animals. And in fact, the first show he did was called Pet Shop.
Oh, really?
Sort of typical of early television, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met Marlon down there. And my first appearance on Marlon's show, my mentor, John Hamlet, and I were on camera with Marlon. And my mentor said to Marlon, "Marlon, I'll have the boy go get the eagle." I was known as the boy in my late 20s, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't show that clip too often. But anyway, then I went off to Africa. You know, I went to college in Indiana at a little college called Earlham College. My father had gone there and a lot of my brothers, kind of a family tradition. But Larry, I caught a disease when I was there.
Yes.
And you know what that was? Nobody told me what I couldn't do.
Well, that's a good disease.
That's a bad disease to have. So I went off to Africa on a wild jaunt. A guy who came down where I was training eagles and cheetahs down there near Ocala came by, and he said he was going to go to Africa to do a big classic documentary. And did I want to go along with him? Well, I would have given my right arm to get to Africa. So that's went over there. Then I had the audacity to try to study the largest eagle in the world that lives in the Amazon,
uh-huh.
in the rainforest, called the harpy eagle. The harpy eats 30-pound monkeys.
Yeah.
For starters. And I did the first studies of the harpy. And those days, I brought three of them back so I could lecture with them. You know, it weighs 20 pounds. The American eagle only weighs about 14, the female.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was on the Today Show, long story short, and Marlon was watching. And he saw me with those big monkey-eating eagles, so he asked me to come to Chicago and do the pilot film for Wild Kingdom. That was in the early 60s.
Seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Well, life goes by pretty quickly when you're having... When you're doing what you enjoy doing, just like your case, man, you're crazy. You've been out there traveling around, carrying those birds and snakes around, all that stuff. Did that too.
Yeah, well. Yeah. One of my favorite stories is when you had to take a harpy eagle on an airplane. Do you remember that story? I'm sure you do.
Sure I do, yeah. Yeah, you want to hear that one?
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I had a lot of things happen with that harpy. I knew I was in trouble once when I had to fly out to do the Carson show, and I had a they had rules in those days that the airplane agents, you know, behind the desk, mm-hmm. they had a little book, and they could read in there what you could carry and what you couldn't. And they based it on the fact that a citizen bird has two toes in front and two behind, see. So I had a falcon in a small box, and I had the harpy in a big box. So I was trying to get out to California, and the guy was very gruff, and he said, "What do you have in that box?" Well, I knew that a minor bird had feet like that, so I said the falcon was a minor bird. And then he said, "Well, what do you have in the big box?" And I said, "Well, that's a major bird." And this guy let me right on. He didn't pick up on that. But coming back, I had to get the harpy back in time for an appearance at the Explorers Club banquet in the ballroom of the Waldorf. Lowell Thomas, who was a very well-known broadcaster, had asked me to pump there with the harpies. So I had to fly out of Chicago, and I remember the box that I had this big eagle in wouldn't fit in most airplanes. It was a Convair 880, I remember. So the baggage compartment door wasn't big enough, so I had an emergency, and they had taken me down into the lounge for the flight attendants because they wanted to get pictures of me holding the eagle with various people from the staff of the airplane. So everything was sort of getting very confused. And then the pilot said, "Why don't you bring it upstairs or bring it in the first class section?" Because I had the eagle hooded. And he said, "I could set it on the back of a chair, and we'll go to New York that way." Well, I mean, I remember it was near a holiday, and I thought, my God, this guy's been drinking. But anyway, I put it on the back of a seat in the first class section, hooded, and just before the door shut, the pilot had told me there weren't going to be many people on the plane. Just before the door shut, this little old lady and man, who were quite up in years, got on, and where did they sit? They sat right behind the eagle. And so everything was cool. I think they thought it was a symbol of the aircraft. Probably yeah. Something stuffed, you know.
Right.
So we started to go down the runway, and the lunge down the runway caused the eagle to put its wings out. So these 7-foot wings went out. And every time the wings went out, the people would go further and further under the chair. So I pretended all the way to New York, every time there was some turbulence, I would pretend that I didn't know whose eagle it was. But those people were just about dead by the time they got to New York. And that's when I ended up flying the eagle at the annual banquet of the Explorers Club. Lowell Thomas, who was a very well-known broadcaster, was the MC. And after the eagle came down from the balcony to my fist, you know, which people couldn't even believe was happening, I noticed the eagle was going to relieve itself. It put its head feathers back and lifted its tail. And I was up there on the dais, and John Eisenhower was to my right, and the head of National Geographic, Gilbert Grosvenor, was sitting on my left. I couldn't get them. I thought I saw an opening, and Lowell Thomas had moved right behind me, and this eagle relieved itself all over his tuxedo in front of 1,500 explorers. So it was quite a while before these people got up off the floor laughing. Lowell Thomas said it was one of his greatest adventures. Then he made me Toastmaster for 3 years because he said the sign of a good Toastmaster is somebody who insults the speaker. So I sure insulted him.
Well, I remember when I went to the Explorers Club and we took a couple of cougars cubs and and a Hamadryas baboon, and we'd had the baboon out first, and in the main room of the Explorers Club, there's this huge stuffed polar bear.
That's right.
In this menacing pose. Well, I hadn't thought that I should really introduce the baboon to the polar bear, you know, walk by at least once so it was familiar with it. Well, that made good entertainment anyway. So we walk by the polar bear, and the baboon barks. I mean, and you know their bark is like deafening.
Yeah,
and that got everybody's attention. And then we fed the baboon a couple of bananas like we would usually do, Dolly. And then
I remember Dolly.
Yeah, I hadn't paid attention that a couple of the banana peels were still laying on the floor. So the next thing we brought out was the two cougars, and I had them in each arm on my side. And I hit those banana peels, and it was like a really bad Three Stooges movie. Both feet went straight up in the air, and I landed square on my back, and within, it felt like a split second, I was up on my feet. And you made some remark that, well, that's a pretty good animal handler not to land on those mountain lions. And I thought, I did not want to land on those mountain lions because I knew exactly what had happened.
Oh, no.
I would have been
You don't want to do that. That's right.
No.
Well, one of those, I've forgotten whether you did it or not, but I let a mountain lion loose with a radio collar, and we tracked it through the audience. It walked around from area table to table. And, of course, you could tell exactly where it was because people were getting up and sort of moving very quickly. But that was sort of fun. Yeah.
Well, I've always...
Larry, we could start telling stories. We could tell a lot of stories, that's for sure.
Well, we could.
You and your dad blame Celebes Ape.
Yeah. You know, I was...
But we're supposed to be... We're supposed to be scientific, aren't we? And,
oh, well, yeah, absolutely.
And academic, are we telling stories or...
Yeah, well...
Yeah.
We like to please our audience. I know the audience could listen to Jim Fowler tell stories for hours, so that's what I'm told to do. We want to remind everybody to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand-new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. We're going to take a little break here. We're going to come right back with legendary TV co-host of Mutual of Omaha's Jim Fowler. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
What a great night tonight, everybody. Jim Fowler from Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom is our guest tonight. What a thrill. We want to remind everyone that next week on Larry Batson's Wild World, Jim Owens, executive director and founder of a fantastic program called Cast for Kids, and joining him from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Fisheries, our good friend Benny Williams, and we're going to be talking about getting kids to go fishing. Anything to get these youngsters outdoors, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is behind completely, and they'll be on next week. Jim Owens and Benny Williams. We'd also like to thank Santee Cooper Country, beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion, Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, 171,000 acres, 450 miles of shoreline, fantastic fishing, and amazing golf. Go to their website at www.santeecoopercountry.org. And also a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. That's God's country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. I'm sure he's heard it a million times. I know I've heard people tell him every time I've gone out and done something with him that he said, man, I could remember growing up with the program Wild Kingdom with Jim Fowler and Marlon Perkins, and it's quite a thrill to have him on tonight. And from his plantation in Albany, Georgia.
Yeah.
So, Jim, what are you up to now? Now, we were talking the other day, and you've got a new organization you're trying to put together. We need to talk about that.
Yeah, well, first, I'd just like you to know that after all these years, I had a lot of fun on that knee, but I just got a knee replacement.
Oh.
And I tried to get the orthopedic surgeon to do it chrome-plated. Might as well, you know. But I'm walking around a little bit now. I'm down here in a Civil War cabin that we have on the place, and I'm trying to recuperate and get a little bit of therapy. Yeah. I've been about 3 or 4 weeks of therapy, but my main passion these days, you know, is trying to be a better spokesperson for the natural world. And we need to get out there and really work hard to try to keep families and kids connected, just like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service knows that it's so important. But we got some real challenges, Larry. We got to get our regulatory agencies to realize that education is a lot more important than just law enforcement. And a lot of our rules and regulations are getting so complex that really qualified educators, it's very difficult now for them to take animals around and show them to the public and lecture. And you know, it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. If you don't ever see a little tiger, are you going to care about whether there are only 2,000 of them left in India?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think it shows what you've done all your career is to introduce people some of the amazing things that are here on the planet with us. Now, we do have to become a lot more sophisticated in our messages. You know, just telling people what an animal looks like and what it eats and where it's found is not enough. I'm beginning to write essays, and my talks these days center around what's in it for humans. Why do we need open space and wildlife and wilderness? And just to tell you, I don't hear too many of our large conservation organizations even talking about that. So we've got a real job to do, and the regulators are just about to put us, I mean, they're so law enforcement oriented. And also, I hate to say it, but a lot of regulators are job security oriented. So they, the more they can prohibit, the less something's liable to happen that might, you know, be a bad mark on their job. That may be a little unfair, but I don't think it is. I've known, state of Georgia now says I've got to build a steel fence up on a stage if I have something like a 25, 30 pound little tiger cub up there. I got to build a steel fence, and I got to attach it to a cable that's attached to a concrete block. And even more disturbing, where the media is programming people very rapidly to think that animals are going to hurt us. Let me tell you something. When something does happen, the media spreads it all over the place because it's so rare, and because, frankly, we humans are horrified by being bitten or clawed. And so the predator's weapon is something that horrifies. Even being bitten by a dog horrifies people. But point is, it's in the media all the time, and so people and regulators get the idea that these animals are hurting us. But you know what? It doesn't even show up on the graph. If you look what's really hurting people, the animals wouldn't even show up.
That's right.
It's easy to regulate them, to outlaw them, because we have certain people in the misinformed people in the animal rights movement actually, you know, we should, obviously, animals should have rights, and we should take better care of them in captivity than they would have gotten in the wild if we're going to have them out of the wild. But I'm not like some of the other guys that run around with animals that say you can't trust an animal, that you can't take the wild out of a wild animal.
All right.
That's a bunch of baloney.
It is.
You can have, you know, your baboons, for example, he's quite a gentleman, and you had him a long time. Yeah.
Well, that's very true. In fact, even tonight on the newscast, they were doing a tease where they said a bobcat was on the loose, and I thought, well, the bobcat's here anyway. And it's just crazy. And we had a situation where there's an animal rescue not far from us, and they had a wild mountain lion that was taken from the state of Montana because it's the female had been killed and the two cubs were sent to this refuge. And one of the cubs had escaped, and it was not human-oriented at all. It was essentially still a wild mountain lion. And I had the local school superintendent call me. He said, hey, I've got kids on bus stops every morning. You know, what should I do? What should I tell these parents? I said, well, tell them this. There are kids on bus stops in Colorado and Wyoming, Montana, Utah, Idaho, every morning, and where there are actually a substantial cougar population. I said, they have more chances of being struck by lightning than one wild mountain lion creating a problem.
Well, I mean, you want to know what's really killing people and hurting people?
Yes, we do.
It has nothing to do with animals. Well, there were 800 horses, 800 people killed by horses last year, but you'll never see any regulation about that. And it's because we're programmed genetically to be horrified by just the idea of being bitten or clawed. But the thing that really gets us, last year in America, there were 84,000 people who were maimed by lawnmowers, and there were 2,000 children were killed by a lawnmower backing over them.
Mm-hmm.
In their neighbor's yard or in, you know, all that. You've heard a lot about parents backing out of driveways with automobiles. Well, lawnmowers are the ones that are really getting people. So I've started another organization, Larry.
Yeah.
If a lawnmower gets out of your yard, we're going to shoot it. we're going to shoot the dang lawnmower and do a film on it and then let the media show that film.
Well, and then
that's really dangerous.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
and
the thing that'll
Fox,
kill you.
Fox could do a television program when lawnmowers attack.
Absolutely. And, you know, get a little ketchup and put on the blades down there. But people, 84,000 people lost limbs from lawnmowers last year or got cut up.
Yep.
I mean, to tell you, now that's pretty serious stuff, not even to mention motorcycle deaths, but we don't talk about anything that's fairly common because it doesn't make the news. But anyway, I'm disturbed about all that because I know the real personality of animals. And believe me, if they're raised properly and given the correct stuff, and you know what you're doing with animal behavior, it's very, very safe. I don't know anybody that's ever been hurt during a lecture.
No.
I was given lectures for 40 years, Anyway.
Well, I have for 30, and I find that the people that do the inspections and the regulators, you know, they absolutely know nothing about animals and have had no experience actually handling wild animals or either caring for them on a day-to-day basis.
Well, many times they can't even identify the animal.
Well,
and,
well, that's right. And I always tell the story of the first inspection we ever had from the United States Department of Agriculture in 77, 78, I had to tell the inspector how to spell lion for the permit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's,
I don't mean to put down inspectors. There are some bad apples in the bunch that we got to follow certain regulations. Mm-hmm. But they ought to open up a little bit and allow education to be the prime motivation and communication.
That's right.
That's what's going to save the natural world.
Do you want to talk about this new organization that you're trying to put together with these lectures from across the country?
Yeah, I want to name it. I've already had an organization, but I didn't have a really good name for it, but I've come around now. I want to call it Spokespeople for Wildlife Through Education, and the initials for that are SPEAK, speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because being a spokesperson is probably one of the most important things we can do. Now, secondly, I know a lot of people around the country who lecture with animals. I got about 45 different representatives right now who will be kind of a founders list. And I know a lot of people because I've been all over, you know, lecturing, and I often use somebody else's animals. And I have certain people I trust, and others, there are some that, you know, I wouldn't use their animals.
Right.
But the point is, we need to get an organization together, and I don't want to come down hard on the regulators any more than I have, because they have a job to do. But you know what? They need to really check out and see the incidence of injury and all this, you know, cause of animals. There are a few outstanding cases like Siegfried and Roy and others that get publicity for years. But that's so unusual and out of the ordinary. You know, they shouldn't dismiss the rest of us. I am going to start trying this organization and have a get-together, workshops, and then we'll have a convention, and talk about the most important thing, and that is what should we be talking about when we go out and lecture? We can't just, obviously, some of the messages in the past haven't been working very well. You can't go out and just talk how wonderful an animal is and what it eats and where it's from.
That's right.
You got to talk about the connection with human beings and why it's important for us to keep open space, wildlife and wilderness. I could get into that, but I don't know if we have enough time to do that. But that's the important things. It's what's in it for somebody working for a living, trying to feed their family. Why do they need wilderness, wildlife, and open space? And you know what? I've never heard any of the conservation groups or even the major wildlife departments of different states. I've never heard them even talk about that. So I'm focused a lot in that area because I believe very strongly that the natural world holds the key to our survival and a lot of other things. And there are lots of justification. I flew over Atlanta, Georgia the other day, and it looks like a giant amoeba crawling out, consuming everything because the cul-de-sacs are, you know, coming out away from Atlanta like a big amoeba just consuming everything. But that's something that our politicians aren't even going to touch because they know the developers have the upper hand, have the money. But we've got to get strong arguments. It's time to do that. So I'm willing to talk about that to people that are really interested. But I hope I can have a session with Fish and Wildlife Service are doing a great job, but I hope I can talk to them someday and some of the state representatives. You know, when those snakes got loose in the Everglades, there are a few snakes down there, but nobody's even been able to census them.
Right.
So the media comes out and says there are 140,000 Burmese pythons in the Everglades.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a bunch of baloney. In fact, 75% of them were killed by the freeze last year.
I heard that.
But Senator Nelson is trying to put a bill before Congress that will make it impossible to bring any non-native animal into the country just because of those snakes. And the media was saying they'd be up in Minnesota in about 10 years eating everybody. Let me tell you something. In South America, we call those big anacondas speed bumps.
Yeah.
Along the road, you'd be amazed how many dead snakes there are. Well, all you got to do is get a map and look at all the roads in South Florida. Those snakes will never get 2 miles out of the Everglades. They'll get squashed.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's roadkills.
Absolutely.
And also, I recommended to a commissioner that all we got to do to get rid of an exotic animal is to put a bounty on them.
Yep.
Hey, man, we killed just about everything when we had bounties on hawks, mountain lions, wolves. We wiped those things out so quick, they were down to almost zero. And it's because, you know, there's a $50 bounty. So if they put a $50 bounty on a snake in the Everglades,
yep,
they're five million guns in the hands of hunters down in Florida. I guarantee you they'll wipe those snakes out. And if they don't, the alligators will. The alligators love these little snakes, as you know.
Well, and like you said, it would be for probably less than $1 million, they could take care of that problem.
Of course they could.
And it just happens.
They could wipe anything out. That's true.
I have to say that when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and I love the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but when they ran an article about that, they had a couple of their people holding a giant snake, which I identified as a Burmese python. It was a boa constrictor.
Yeah, right.
And that was in one of their major publications.
I've seen that in quite a few films.
Yes.
On animal or discovery, yeah.
So your ideas
a lot of things to talk about. My main thing is I'm passionate about, Larry, I'm trying to do new kinds of wildlife parks, and they're not zoos. They're big, open, free-roaming areas. But guess what? The message is very strong. It's something reconnecting families and children back with the natural world so they know it's important. But I combine education with adventure. And that's about the only way we're going to pull people away from shopping malls. But we got to do something because we don't have too many people, you know, going out and experiencing nature. That's another big challenge.
Well, yeah. They've discovered, I know in many parts of the world, my main area that I thought about was in Africa, that ecotourism is going to save animals like gorillas.
Yeah, and that's one of the most powerful. Yep.
And how these scientists were going to areas in Africa where the mountain gorillas lived and the lowland gorillas lived, and basically their concept, and they finally figured this out, Jim, that if they can get these gorillas used to people being around, because, as you know, for many years they were killed. I mean, people, you know, jungle meat.
Okay.
That what a great boost in tourism, and they're teaching these people in these remote parts of the world that, hey, there is a lot of money to be made by bringing tourists in to see these animals. They're worth more alive than they are, as the woman put it, on somebody's plate.
Well, that's about the only thing that saved a lot of the animals in Africa. The only trouble is now as the human population grows, the humans always have the priority, and they can do anything they want. So they're beginning to put fences around some of the parks. Well, that's going to stop biological evolution, where the animals can't mix with other areas because the local villagers don't want an elephant or don't want an animal walking through their backyard or getting out in the garden eating all the corn.
Mm-hmm.
But so these fences are going up, and that's shocking. Plus, they're taking a poison called Ferdan into Kenya and also South Africa and Tanzania, and they're putting it in the carcasses of an animal that's partly eaten by a lion or something, and then everything that comes to that carcass after that gets killed by this Ferdan. And that's a very serious thing because they could wipe lions out, you know, in our lifetime very easily.
Yeah,
it's all due to human greed.
Oh, absolutely.
It's all human greed. But you're right. Those lions can earn more income for the villages than they can with cattle.
Well, they can, and people will pay lots of money to experience that wild world. I know that you took Johnny Carson to Africa, and you basically said that he told you that it changed his life.
Well, he said that publicly too. He saw things that were very real. Johnny's a keen observer. He also is a linguist. He picked up on Swahili in just a fairly short time. And used to do magic tricks in the evening for the staff, the camp staff. He's a great guy. We
We had a lot of fun together. His wife is quite an adventuress, and she's the one that talked Johnny into going over there. Yeah.
Well, you know, your appearances on the Carson show, one of the things that was so so good about them is that Johnny never looked at the animals before the segment, so he was completely spontaneous.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, see, Johnny had a keen sense of the absurd. And also, Johnny never, he knew the key to television. He never tried to make things happen. He never tried to be funny. You know, I like Jay Leno, but he thinks it's funny to take a little wolf pup over and stick it in the face of the band leader.
Yeah.
See, that's contrived. That's not spontaneous. When Don Rickles was on, you never knew what was going to happen. With my animals, you didn't either. So it's the spontaneity that counts. That's what makes television really worth looking at.
Is there one particular moment that stands out in your years of taking animals on Johnny Carson that people ask you about? Yes, that people ask you about the most,
well,
you think about?
Well, there are lots of ones that are out there. Sometimes you don't realize which ones are going to really be a hit. It was my job to be a straight man. See, there's some other guys that go out with animals now, but they're always trying to either be funny or shock the host. And I hope I don't ever fall into that. My job is to show respect for the animals, and whatever they do is to be a straight man for Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I did that for so many years. I knew him quite well, and I knew how to make, at least have an opportunity for things to happen. But the point is this. A lot of those segments that I did, people who don't really care about the natural world would come up to me and say, hey, I saw that, something like a binturong that you had that was from the rainforest of Southeast Asia. Boy, that's quite an animal. You know,
mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have retained all that had they not seen it put his tail around Johnny's nose and act like it was urinating on him. But anyway, the surprise and the number of things that happened were totally spontaneous. I often left room for something to happen, but I never tried to push it, you know, and make it happen. Yeah.
Well, you know, one night, Cheryl, my wife and I were sitting up late, and they were showing the top 50 moments on the Johnny Carson show.
Yeah.
And the number 15 moment was a segment with yourself and
yeah.
a Celebes Black Ape by the name of Doc.
Oh, my God. Oh, I remember Doc.
Would you mind
you
telling
got me
this,
on that one.
Yeah, would you mind telling this worldwide audience what happened that night?
Worldwide audience. Well, in typical Larry Batson way, I had seen Doc. I had met Doc. Doc was a Celebes ape, probably one of the worst-looking apes in the world. Mohawk hairdo, solid black, teeth about 2 inches long, with a grimace that was like a grin. Anyway, Larry knew Doc would go crazy, so we were going to put him on a table. And just before I went out, Larry came over and said, Jim, I'm sorry to tell you this, but Doc had reached puberty now. He'll go at any male that looks at him. And he said, I tried to get him castrated, but I didn't have time. That was you telling me this just as I was going out.
Well, yeah.
Doc did this. He put on a heck of a show, and Johnny almost got really in trouble with Doc. Yeah.
Well, he got hit upside
the
head.
Well, he slugged Johnny.
Yes.
But Johnny was making faces at him. I got out of there just in time. Doc would have taken both of us apart if I'd looked him in the eye.
Well, I have to tell you, when I was behind the curtain, when this was going on, I thought it was a complete disaster. And I was so disappointed. But when it aired that night and saw the final results and of all the attention that Doc got after that,
Yeah.
You know, you just can't predict good television. And that was
Well, Larry, the point is, when I'm up there, I can hear the belly laughs. Doc pulled a lot of belly laughs in.
He did. God bless Doc. We're with Jim Fowler, Beach of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. We want to remind everyone that this program is brought to you by several underwriters, such as We Want You Cottages, way up in Chautauqua Lake, New York, and they've got an exciting new website with something called iKids Fishing, promoting getting youngsters interested in the fantastic sport of fishing, basically getting them outdoors. Their website, www.wewantyou.com. And also a big thank you to Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call at 317-243-0700. Jim, it's always great to talk with you. I'm glad you're recuperating so well, and it won't be long to be out doing what Jim Fowler does, huh?
Yeah, I'll be up and around. I've had a bad knee for a long time. But anyway, I won't get into that. But it's getting along fine. I'm beginning to be able to trust it.
Well, I know the times that I've worked with you, you've put this deal off for probably at least 5 years.
Try like 15.
15, my Lord. And I know that you attribute it to wrestling a wildebeest somewhere in Africa, but in reality it was probably those physical contests with Earlham College in the sport of football.
It was actually football, but I got a better story than that. I was on the movie Gorillas in the Mist with Sigourney Weaver, climbing those mountains, and I didn't want to be a wimp in front of her, so I overdid it. And I could hardly walk after that,
That had to be quite an experience.
Oh, yeah. I don't have time to talk about it, but it was quite an experience.
Well, the next time we'll make that time, I'll make a note of it to bring that particular subject up.
Yeah.
Jim, it's always a pleasure. Gosh. Want to thank
you
for being on the show. Jim Fowler.
Well, you got a great voice for radio, and you got a lot of experience and knowledge yourself. Larry, we got to get together and get that new organization put together.
Well, you know, you have my phone number, and I'm always ready. We've traveled all over this country doing different things with you.
Yeah.
And it's always been a pleasure, always been a lot of fun, always unpredictable. But
that's right.
But I'll tell you what, I still look back at these moments that working with you at various events, I treasure them. And as I said, you are probably the
Let me know. Well, let me know what happened with those birds if media is calling the shots right.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I'll let you know immediately. We'd like to thank Jim Fowler for being on our program tonight.
Right.
What a great show. Folks, you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, okay, Larry, I need a cup.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.